says that Yaakov Avinu had 12 stones that he could have picked to use as a pillow. And the stones were fighting amongst them. Some say it means the spiritual counterparts of the stones. Every physical thing has a spiritual counterpart. So the heavenly forces that represented these stones were fighting which stone the tzaddik should put his head on. So the Rebbe Shem made a miracle and fused all the stones together, and now Yaakov Avinu, no more problem. So they ask, l'chor is still a problem. Because if each stone was big enough to let Yaakov put his head on it, now there were 12 stones together, they were 12 times the size of his head. So his head's only going to go on one part of the stone. Why aren't they still arguing which part of the stone? So the Chiddush Arim says that as long as they're separate stones, it makes a difference which one. But once they're all one stone, it doesn't make a difference if it's this side of the stone or that side of the stone, right? What does it make a difference if a person does something with his arm, his leg, his ear? It's all him. Once it's one stone, it doesn't make a difference anymore.
Rabbi once told the story that they also, when they had a guest, that they had all the signs, that they put them all together, and the guest happened to be Albert Einstein, who made Einstein. All the signs.
Okay. It says that Yaakov saw Sulam Mutzav Arza. So some Medrashim say that this Sulam was not the Makom HaMikdash, but was Sinai, Har Sinai. And in fact, in Gematria, Sulam is the same Gematria as Sinai. Okay. It's what's it called? 70. Yeah, right. So that's Sinai, no, how's that could be? Sulam? Well, Sulam would be what's it called? 130. And Sinai is 130. Yeah. Okay. Sulam with a Vav, without a Vav. Without a Vav. Now, with the Vav, Sulam has the same gematria, it's 136 with the Vav. In the Machzor of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, when it says tshuva, tefillah, tzedakah, mavir, and zeroa gzeira, there's little words above tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah. Above tshuva is tzom. Above tefillah is kol. And above tzedakah is mamon. All of those words equal 136 separately. Right? Kol is 136, mamon is 136, and tzom is 136. Those are all the sulam, mutzav arza. They're the ladders that tefillah is a ladder that connects heaven and earth, and tzedakah and fasting is what tshuva is accompanied by fasting. 136 times 3 is 408. And that's what it says, bezos yavo aron el hakodesh. Right? Zos is the sum total of tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah. There's more to it, though. Says that ish bar lo yeda uchesil lo yoven ezos. The bar is 272. That's two times 136. So ish bar, a person who only has two of them, he's interested in the tefillah and the tshuva, but the tefillah and the tzedakah, but not in the tshuva. Right? He's willing to give tzedakah, he's willing to daven, but not interested in doing tshuva. So he's an ish bar, a fool. And he doesn't know Zos. He doesn't know that you need all three. You need the other 136 also. So a person only knows 272, but doesn't know the 408 is Ish Bar. Okay. Next. A little bit more serious. It says, Yaakov Avinu made a neder. If God will be with me, Ushmorani b'drechazeh asher anochi holeich, and he'll protect me, give me bread to eat, and lechem beged vilbosh, clothing to wear, and bread to eat, right? V'shafti v'shalom v'esavi, and I come home safe and sound, then v'hoyu Hashem li lelokim, then God will be my God. So that's making conditions, and if not, find some other God. What does that mean? V'hoyu Hashem li lelokim. So many Mefarshim learn with different ways. I'm going to tell you where the Michta Meliyahu learns, that you're putting the comma in the wrong place. That's part of the condition. And the last condition is that Hashem should be for me as an Elohim. Then, kol asher titen li aser asana. Then I'll give Meiser and this stone will be a Mizbeach, whatever. What does that mean? V'hoya Hashem li Elohim. What's the condition? So the Michtam Liol says what it means is the following. Hashem is Midas HaRachamim. And Elohim is Midas HaDin. Yaakov Avinu said, I don't want any help in this world. I don't want any mercy. I want to be guided and directed, and my relationship with Hashem should be Kulo Din. Hashem, even when normally people get mercy, I want to be Elohim Din. What's the idea? So we've explained in the past, but it's explained now succinctly. Originally, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this world b'midas hadin. Why? Because that's the purpose of this world. God could have created just the world to come, created our neshamos, and put them into the world to come, and fulfilled His plan of wanting to shower goodness on a creation that He would create. The ultimate goodness is showering Himself on that creation, which is what we call Olam Haba. Tzadikim yoshvim, vatroseim barasheim, v'nehenem iziv ha'shchina. Tzadikim sit and bask in the pleasure of God's presence. That is the eternal pleasure that we can't imagine what it is, not even allowed to speak of it in spiritual terms. We always speak of it euphemistically and as a suda and whatever, but the truth is it's a total spiritual enjoyment, which we're not familiar with completely, and therefore we have to speak about it in terms that we can understand. But that's what it is. That's what the purpose of creation was, that the Rabban Hashem should create a creation that could have that intimate relationship with Him eternally. And then He could shower His goodness on that creation. That was God's will. Why it's like that? God didn't need it. Why did He want it? No answer. That's God's will. But that was the purpose why God wanted to create. If that's the case, He could have created neshamas, put them in Olam Haba and finished. What do you need this world for? But God knew that if He would create neshamas and give them this pleasure, it wouldn't be deserved. It wouldn't be appreciated because it wasn't earned. And the neshama appreciates what it earns, not what it gets for free. Okay. Now that in itself needs explanation because it's an obvious question. That is, God's already creating neshamas and He wants to shower them with goodness and they should appreciate it. So make a neshama that can appreciate what you don't earn. Who made that rule that people don't appreciate what they don't earn? God. So let them change the rule. That kind of question you can't answer. Can't ask, you can't answer because there's no answer. Why? Because that answer would be answering a question that's out of our realm completely. It's out of the realm of existence, meaning the following. Our minds can fathom that which is in our frame of reference. Anything out of our frame of reference, our minds can't fathom. An example. Picture nothingness in your mind. Nothingness. What do you picture? Empty space. That's not nothing. That's space. Picture no space. It's impossible. Can't even imagine it. Why? Because we have no frame of reference to no space. We live in a world where there's always space. So our conception of nothing is empty space, but not nothing, no space. The mind can't balance. It's out of our frame of reference. Imagine something you never saw and never heard of. It's impossible. If you never saw and never heard of it, you have no frame of reference to it. There's no way to. What you can imagine is something made up. Hold on a question. Made up of many different parts that are things that you saw or heard of, but that's just a combination of a lot of things that you saw or heard of and make it up, something that you didn't see. But something that you never saw, never heard of, nor none of its components, impossible to imagine. Even the Ribono Shel Olam, we can't have a connection to God except within creation. The greatest name we have for the Ribono Shel Olam, which we don't say, is Yud Kei Vav Kei, which means the one who brought about creation. our connection to God is from creation on. Before creation, we don't even have a name for God. We call him Ein Sof. That's not a name. That means I have no idea what I'm talking about. So the our connection is with what we can relate to within the boundaries of creation. Therefore, you're not allowed to ask what came before creation, what's beyond the universe, because it's out of our frame of reference. It's not only it's us, or it's impossible. So it's not kedai to do things that you can't do anyway. So that's it's also to do things that are impossible, right? To try to think about things that are impossible to think about. So therefore, the question: why did God create neshamas that can't appreciate what they don't earn, is a question on God's mind before creation. That's something that's out of our realm. What can we understand? Once God created the world the way we know it, what can we understand about it? But why it couldn't have been different? Not. There is a little bit of an answer that the Ramchal seems to say in one place, why the Rabbanu Shalom wanted us to earn. Not so much because we couldn't appreciate it, because in order to have that close connection to God, you have to be like God. The more like God you are, the more of a connection you can have with Him. That's the way that you have that connection. And doing Torah and mitzvahs and living in this world in a godly way makes your neshama more like God. Now, the Rabbanu Shalom doesn't get anything from anyone. Doesn't receive anything for sure, right? The Rabbanu Shalom also doesn't need to create for himself, but he is the source of everything, including himself, whatever that means. Okay. So therefore, if a person would get Olam Haba, it would be unlike God. He's begetting. Getting is already makes you unlike God, and you can't have that close relationship. So in order to be more like God, we have to be the source of our Shlemus and not receive it from an outside source. Mm-hmm. Okay, even though it's still not 100% like God, because God doesn't create his Shlemus either. He is Sholei. In any case, That is a partial idea. So in any case, bottom line, the Rabbanu Shalom created this world so we could earn, even more specifically, we can create the world to come. By doing what we're supposed to do in this world, we make our neshamas more godlike and create our share in the world to come. Right? Most of it looking like earning it, but it's not really earning it, it's creating it. We create our Olam Haba. Therefore, the ideal of this world, the purpose of this world, was to earn and not get it for free. Therefore, the best would be that this world is totally predicated on din. Din means you get what you deserve. No less, no more. So then, whatever a person did in this world and created this world to come would be his. No help. No rachamim. Rachamim means you get help. No help. Whatever you do on your own. That makes the world to come appreciated, because you did it on your own. But the Rabbanu Shalom saw that for most people, if he made the world exist totally on din and what you deserve, that people would lose their Olam Haba completely, and that the whole purpose would be destroyed. So therefore, the Rabbanu Shalom added rachamim. But he didn't add it across the board. He added it for those who need it. But there are individuals in history that taka could exist according to the first plan. That's what it means. In the beginning, God intended to create the world b'midas hadin, and then he created b'midas harachem. It doesn't mean change his mind. It means he created it on two dimensions. One dimension of din, and the other dimension of rachem. And we've said in the past, Tu B'Shvat time, that that's what the machlokas, where the world was created on Nisan, or Tishrei, and Tosfos says it was created twice, once b'machshava and once b'maisa. Tishrei is the world b'machshava, meaning theoretically the world should have been created din, Tishrei. But afterwards, the Rabbanu Shalom b'maisa added rachamim. But the world exists on two levels. A level of machshava, which is for yichidei skula, for special individuals, and the level of maisa, which is for most people. So most people need the din tempered by rachamim, otherwise it couldn't exist. But there are people in history, Yaakov Avinu was one of them, who could exist totally on din, and that's the ideal. Rabbi Akiva was another one. Right? That's why it says that the Rabban Hashem answered the angels when they said, Zu Torah v'zu Schara, he said, Shto kach also b'machshav alefonai. This was my original intention. The world should be governed totally by din. So by din, you get punished without any mercy for the small sins you do. There's nobody in this world that's perfect. But then your Olam Haba is all yours. So it's beyond comprehension, as it says by the Olam Haba of the Asara Rugi Malchus, especially Rabbi Akiva. So that's what Yaakov said. I want another condition. I want you to take care of my needs in this world, but I don't want you to give me any mercy. I want you to give me exactly what I deserve, because I want my Olam Haba to be perfect. I don't want any help. So V'hoya Hashem, what normally would be Hashem, Midas HaRachamim, I want Lil Elokim, I want only Elokim. Bereshis Bara Elokim, and he only added Hashem Elokim later. I don't want that Hashem, I want it Elokim totally. Okay, that's a way of understanding that. Okay, Yaakov Avinu, it says, passes by the Makom HaMikdash, and he forgets to daven there. He gets almost to Haran, and he remembers that he passed by the place where his ancestors daven, where the Akedah was, and he didn't daven there. So the Rabban Hashem makes miracles, he goes back to the place. Okay, he's back at the place there, he sleeps there, has this tremendous dream, wakes up in the morning, he says, Ochein yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh, v'anochi lo yadati. God's presence is here, I didn't know. Well, you didn't know. That's why you went back. You realize that you should have davened in the place where your avos davened, where the Shechina is, makom hamikdash, and you didn't. So you wanted to go back, and a miracle happened, and you got back there, or the place came to you. And you slept there, right? So what do you mean, anochi lo, you didn't know? Of course you knew. What was going on over here? You knew we were sleeping. We are anochi lo yadati. I wanted to say the pshat like this, and I think that I saw that the Chiddush Yarim says something similar to this, if not the same thing. I wanted to say the following. It says in the Gemara in Pesachim that each of the Avos had a different perception of the Makom HaMikdash. Avraham called it a har. Har Hashem Yiroeh, mountain. Har HaBayis, Har HaMikdash. Yitzchak called it a sodeh. Vayetze Yitzchak Lasuach Basodeh. And Yaakov called it a bias. Now, in explaining that, I have a few ways of explaining it, but now we'll suffice with two. One, Avraham Avinu, the Rambam says that there are three functions of the Beis HaMikdash. In the beginning of Hilchos Beis HaBechira, where he discusses the halachos of the Beis HaMikdash, he says there is a mitzvah to build a bias Lashem. It's one function. It is God's home, Kibiyachot. In other words, if you want to know where God's Shechina is predominantly, intensely, in its most kavua place in this world, that's the Beis HaMikdash. Even though God's everywhere, just like the Neshama is everywhere, but you feel it more in your head, your heart, right? The same thing, God's presence is everywhere. The question is, where do we feel it more? Where is it more intensely felt by us? So the Beis HaMikdash is that place where God's presence is intensely felt. That's called Beis Hashem. This is address. That's God's address. You could be in a lot of places, but this, you know, you feel God's presence there. That's Beis Hashem. Then, that's one mitzvah. Shebo makridim hakorbanos, shebo olim sholosh pan bashana. Three times a year, you converge on that place and the kind of mitzvah liyal regal. Okay, and Shishon Makrivenus HaKorbanos. That's where you bring Korbanos. Now this concept of Bayis Lashem is that's where the Torah comes from. The Sanhedrin sat there. The Rabban Hashem spoke to the Nevi'im, Mibein Kodesh HaKadoshim, Mibein Shnei Akruvim, in the first Beis HaMikdash. In the Mishkan, that's where the Torah was given. So the Mikdash is the extension of Har Sinai of Matan Torah. That's Bayis Lashem. That's where God lives. That's God's presence, Torah. Then, the place where God's presence is, you go three times a year to feel that presence, to see and be seen. That's Aliyah L'Rega. And that's the place where you make sacrifices. Where else to make sacrifice except where God's presence is. So those are the three functions of the Beis HaMikdash. It should be predominantly a Bayis Lashem, where you are Mekayim Aliyah L'Rega, right, and you are makriv korbanos. So Avraham saw the idea of aliyah l'regel. the Har Hashem, the place where you ascend, and that's where you come face to face with God. You're scrutinized by God. You scrutinize Him. Avraham Avinu saw that idea, Har Hashem. Yitzchak Avinu saw the Sada. A Sada is a place that is, that you can cultivate. It's a place that you can bring out the powers of the earth, plant there, bring out what the earth has to give. That's Karbanos. Karbanos is taking the different spiritual powers in the world and developing them. So he saw the Mikdash as a Sada, meaning the place where you bring sacrifices. Yaakov Avinu saw it as a bias, as that's where God's home is, because Yaakov Avinu was Amudat Torah. And Torah is the Bayis Hashem. Avraham was Chesed. Chesed is God's predominant midah. The reason he created the world is Chesed. He wanted to do Chesed. So if you want to recognize God, you recognize Him through Chesed. You want to come Aliyah LeRegel and see God and be seen, that's Chesed. So Avraham Avinu saw the Mikdash as a har through his midah of Chesed. Yitzchak saw it as a Sodeh, Karbonos, as his midah of Avodah. But Yaakov Avinu saw it as bias Lashem because of his midah of Torah. That's what made it a bias Lashem. This is God's home. This is where the Torah is continued to be given. That's where God dwells, basically with the Torah. So Yaakov Avinu, when he spent the night there, he knew it was Har Hashem from Avraham. He knew it was Sada Hashem. But he didn't know it was Beis Hashem. That's what he says. Right? Achein Yesh Hashem b'mokom hazeh. Vanochi lo yodati. The next sentence says, "Ein zeki im beis Elokim." That's what I didn't know. I knew it was a har Hashem. I knew that aspect. I knew the aspect of Sodom, but I didn't know the aspect of bias. And compared to the other two, the aspect of bias is so much more superior. And I know that I would have slept here. What? Oh, no, because that dream that he had, and he saw, that's what he said, that ladder represented Sinai. This is the place of the Mokum of Torah. So that's one idea of Har, bias, and that's what he meant. And the another idea, not this question, the other idea is, Avraham Avinu came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu was an individual. Right? Yochid Hoyav, Echad Hoyavram. That's like a mountain. You know, a guy goes up on top of a mountain, secluded, and he comes to an understanding of God. Yitzchak was the first shidduch, first Jewish marriage, right? And marriage is compared to a sada. The woman is considered the sada of the husband, and that's when he went. Lasuach basadeh, when Rivka came and the shidduch was finalized. So Yitzchak came to God as a couple. Yitzchak and Rivka together, right? They grew in Avos Hashem together as a couple. Yaakov Avinu created the first Jewish family because by Yitzchak there was an Esav and a Yaakov, and Esav was not part of it. By Yaakov there was 12 Shvatim. That was Beis Yaakov, Beis Yisrael. So Yaakov came to the Ribono Shel Olam through a family, and that's superior to coming to him as a couple or as an individual. So that's what he said. I didn't know that the Ribono Shel Olam is here in that intensity of a bias Lashem. Right? I knew there was a har, I knew it was a sodom, I never understood the idea of bias until the dream that I had tonight. Yeah. Okay. Next. Yaakov Avinu comes to Haran. And he sees people around the well, and it's early. And the Rambam says in Mor Nevuchim that the first stage of a person becoming a prophet on the way to prophecy is to be concerned with justice in the world, not mind your own business. Mm-hmm. Right? What's Yaakov's business? These people don't belong to him. It's not his sheep. You have to get involved. Hey, you know, it's not time to stop working. Get back to work. So Yaakov tells him, Rashi says the following. If it's somebody else's sheep, you're a bunch of ganavim, right? You're taking a day's wage and you're not giving a day's work. And even if it's your own sheep, it's not time to finish working. Get back to work, right? You lazy bums. Now, we have a mitzvah of don lekap schus, judging people favorably. If I was Rashi, I would have said the opposite. look, if it's your own sheep, okay, you're not ganovim, but you know, you're lazy. And if it's somebody else's sheep, you're ganovim. Why do you assume first, if it's somebody else's sheep, you're ganovim? He should have said first the other way. Look, I give you the benefit, that's probably your own sheep. But if it's chastasom, it's somebody else's sheep, you're ganovim. Why do you say it the other way around? Assume first that it's somebody else's sheep, and if not, still, lo eis. There's a Gemara in Bava Metzia. The Gemara says that somebody who shepherds, what's it called, his own sheep, a shepherd's sheep, is considered a ganav. We can take on he's a ganav. Why? Because they used to let their sheep graze in other people's yards. Stam roed, he's pasul eidus. Gemara says that only if he's taking care of his own sheep. If he's taking care of other people's sheep, ain't nothing chote, but lo, how should I sin for your sake? Not my sheep. For my sheep, I'm willing to let them steal and save me a meal. But to save me, you a meal? Why should I save you a meal? I'm not going to sin. Ain't nothing chote, but lo. A person doesn't sin unless he gets a benefit. He doesn't sin for other people. So therefore, that's what Yaakov said. If he would have said, if it's your own sheep, then automatically they would be considered ganavim and pasulaitis. So he didn't want to say the worst. The worst one is you're shepherding your own sheep. Then I have to assume that you're a bunch of ganavim. But if it's somebody else's sheep, you're not stam a ganav. But today, you're doing something wrong. But not that you're a ganav across the board. And even if it's your own sheep, right, it's not the time to look to stop working. That's why he, adarabba, that's exactly, he took the lesser side first, because the more serious side would be that it's their own sheep, and then they're understood to be ganav and pasul le'edus, because somebody who shepherds his own sheep is probably a god. Okay, so Yaakov comes to Lavan, and
what? And then Chosef helps them, let them feed the sheep.
Yeah, fine. In the end, but in the beginning, he accuses them, right, and gives them Musa. Okay, and they say that that's the way to give Musa. First, he comes and says, "Achai, my brothers, where are you from?" Right. First, you have to show that you care about the person. Achai, right? He didn't come with them and start yelling at them. First, he made nice to them. You're my brothers. I care about you. And by the way, since you're my brothers, right? Brothers don't act like this. What are you stealing? So, if you want to give Musar to somebody, you have to show me care about them, not stop and want to condescendingly tell them what to do. Okay. Yaakov Avinu says to Lavan, make a deal with you. I'll work for you, and my wages will be your daughter. Rachel Bitcha Haktana. Rachel, and that is a way of, so kind of colloquial thing, when you want to tell somebody exactly. This exactly, Rachel Bitcha Ktana. So Shurei Das says, what did Yaakov gain with this? In the end, Lavan still cheated him. So he says, Rachel, and don't tell me you're going to get somebody from the street and name her Rachel. I mean Rachel Bitcha, your daughter Rachel. And don't tell me you're going to change your daughter's names and call Leah Rachel and Rachel Leah. I want Haktana. You can't change her age. So Rachel Bitcha Haktana, I want Rachel, your daughter, the younger one. No way out. But I mean, if he thought Lavan was a charlatan, a trickster, right? He was a cheat. What's it going to help telling Rachel Bitcha Haktana? And if he trusted him, why do you have to say Rachel Bitcha Haktana? Says the Shurei Das, there's an idea of Pishon Peh. Most people don't sin if they have no excuse. If they have no way of thinking, at least to themselves, like to justify it. You have to have a justification. If you sin without a justification, it's a much worse sin. And it's usually about what people can't do. So Yaakov said like this, I know Lavan is a cheat. But even cheats have to have some justification what they do. If they know for sure they're doing something wrong, right, it's going to be harder for them to do it. Most people don't want to do things wrong they know are wrong. Most people do things wrong because they justify it and give excuses why it's okay. But to do something, you have to be a really bad person to do something you know is wrong and have no justification for it. So Yaakov Avinu wanted to take away every justification from him. Right? You're not going to be able to get out of this some way and not give me the Rachel that I want, and think, well, it's okay. Well, this is, I said Rachel, for she's Rachel, isn't she? So I said, Rachel Bitcha. Okay, well, this is my daughter. I just changed her name. Leah used to be Leah, now she's called Rachel. So this Rachel Bitcha. No, Akhtame, you can't change her age. In the end, Lavan found another justification. We never give the younger one before the older one. So he thought something Yaakov didn't think of, right? How to justify it. But what Yaakov was doing was taking away his Pishon Peh and making it harder for him to sin. Even a hardcore criminal doesn't like to do things that he knows feels guilty that he's doing something wrong. He likes to try to find some kind of justification. That's the idea of Pishon Peh.
Gamblers and poker players are very strong ethics. They'll kill someone for that.
Okay, let's.
The following rule.
Okay, one last thing. I think we mentioned this in the past. I just think it's good to mention again. Yaakov Avinu was the Amud HaEmes, Torah, right? Abraham was Chesed. And the Torah tells us a lot about Abram's chesed and the guests and whatever. And the Yitzchak is Avoda. We hear about the Akeva. Yitzchak is a Korban Ola. Yaakov Avinu is Amud HaTorah. How much does the Torah speak about how many blot Yaakov learned, right? And his Hasmada talks about his learning in between Vayetze and Vayelech. Vayetze Yaakov, Vayelech, 14 years he spent in Beis Sefer. That's it, a hint of the 14 years he learned in Beis Sefer. That's the extent that we're told about Yaakov's big learning. What do we hear about Parshas Vayetze? It's a major parsha of Yaakov Avinu as Yaakov, his business dealings. How he dealt in business with Lavan. Isn't that strange? Here's the guy who's supposed to be Amud HaTorah, and what the Torah tells about is how he dealt in business. Not his Torah. We don't do too much about Torah altogether. Avram, we hear Chesed, and Yitzhak, we hear Avoda, and a little bit, a hint about his Torah. And mostly, how he dealt with Lavan, right, in business. So I think the answer to that is very simple. It says that the first thing a person is judged on in the next world is Torah. First thing, did you learn Torah? How much Torah did you learn? Did you observe the Torah? Whatever. That is the first thing of judgment. Yet, the Gemara says in Shabbos, that when you come to Din, you ask six questions. The first question is, Nasata v'nasasa v'muna. Did you deal in business honestly? The second question is, Kovati itim l'Torah. Did you set times for Torah learning? The obvious question Tosfos says, if you judge on Torah first, here it says that you're asked about your business first. Tosfos says, no. You're asked about your business first, but you're judged on your Torah first. So it doesn't explain why. Why in the world would they judge you on your Torah that they ask you first about your business? But the answer is, that if a person learned Torah, he was koveya itim haTorah, but he wasn't honest in business, then how much is his Torah worth? Then you're really not interested in doing what the Rav Amram wants, because you think that you're the master of your means and not God, because otherwise why would you steal and cheat? Right? So obviously you think you're the one who's the boss over here. So what kind of Torah did you learn? Beyond that, a person who works honestly and does it in order that he should be able to observe the Torah and learn Torah, so have the wherewithal to eat, to pay his rent, right, his mortgage, whatever, right? So that kind of person, the time that he's working is considered learning because he's preparing to be able to learn, observe the Torah. So it's all part of the Torah. Before we can ascertain how much Torah you learned, we have to find out first how you did in business. Because if you took care of that part of your life properly, we can count that as learning Torah. Because it's all a preparation for Torah. So, in order to really know if somebody learned Torah, and how much Torah he learned, we have to first ascertain how he was in business. Was he an honest person? If you're not honest, right, you're a cheat, you're not an honest person, and what kind of Torah is honesty? Torah is true. What kind of Torah did you have if you're a liar, if you're a cheat? So then your Torah is not true. Then it's not Torah. So first we have to ascertain, were you an honest person in business? Then your Torah is honest. And also, if you worked with the right intention, your work became a preparation for Torah. It has a din of Torah too. So before we can judge you on Torah, we first have to ask you the question, were you honest in business? After we know that, then we can find out, kavati itim b'Torah. Were you learning Torah, and how much Torah were you learning? We can ascertain based on the first question. Therefore, if we want to know about Yaakov Avinu as Amud HaTorah, the most important thing is to know how he dealt in business. So the Torah spends more time speaking about Avraham Avinu's honesty with Lavan, right? Yaakov Avinu's with what? Yaakov Avinu's honesty with Lavan, rather than how much time he spent at the Beis Medrash. The time at the Beis Medrash is irrelevant if he wasn't an honest person.
But you can also learn this in the way that dealing with goyim in a business level, like the rabbi said last week, is not necessarily the same way you deal, because there's different halakhas in terms of kinyanim, like in terms of when you can trust emunah, ne'emanut ben the goy, because he had to deal with Lavan this way. So it's not just...
No, but it's a kal v'chomer. If he was able to deal with Lavan, who cheated him left and right, and deal with him honestly, right? He could have cheated him too. He didn't cheat him. He just found a miraculous way of getting rich without basically taking anything from Lavan. Right? Lavan accused him of taking everything from him. But he didn't. A miracle happened. And then the sheep all... And Lavan agreed with it. And every time Lavan saw that sheep are producing that kind of thing, he changed the condition. No, I didn't mean that. I meant something else. 10 times, Yaakov said, you changed the condition. So he was cheating him left and right. And under those circumstances, most people would say, if I'm dealing with a guy like that, I'm going to cheat him. And Yaakov didn't. It says, I spent nights in the cold watching your sheep, and daytimes in the heat. Right? You know that I... And Lavan never didn't say that's not true. So it was true. Mm-hmm. He was moser nefesh to work for this guy who's cheating him left and right. So if Yaakov Avinu can deal with a boss like that with honesty, kosher, with honest people, deal with honesty.